And Ben, if you would do the roll call, please.
Barford.
Here.
Barford is present. Alder Bennett is excused. Carlson.
Present.
Carlson's present. Chinchak Lyon.
Present.
Chinchak Lyon is present. Alder Evers. Alder Evers not present. Glazer.
Present.
Glazer is present. Gonzalez.
Present.
Gonzalez is present. Alder Govindarajan.
Here.
Govindarajan is present. Groot.
Here.
Groot is present. Imes.
Here.
Imes is present. Kinderman.
Here.
Kinderman is present. King. King is not present. Luskin is excused. McKay.
Present.
McKay is present. Mendez.
Present.
Mendez is present. Perkins.
Present.
Perkins is present. Rivera. Rivera not present. Alder Verveer.
Here.
Alder Verveer is present. Alder Vitiver.
Present.
Alder Vitiver is present. Weber.
Here.
Weber is present. Wells.
Present.
Wells is present. Ziegler. Guess I'm on the list. Ziegler.
Present.
Ziegler is present. We do have quorum.
Great, thanks so much. First order of business is approval of the minutes from June 27, 2024. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Brenda moved. Is there a second?
I will second.
Thank you, Doug. And discussion or comments? Seeing none, we will take this as unless there's objection, the minutes pass. And seeing no objection, so minutes pass. Thank you. Next is disclosures and recusals. We only have one agenda item on the new business, and that is for information only. Any conflicts there? Seeing none. First order of business then is public comment, Legistar 62342.
We have n no registrants for general comment. We have a few registrants for item two, Scott Utter to speak, and Argyle Wade available to answer questions. And
Okay.
then for agenda item three, Peter Schlecht in support available to answer questions.
Great. Thank you so much. On to new business then. Legistar 84454, the Student Affairs Facilities for Framework Plan. Scott. Madam Chair?
I'm gonna let Janine start, Barry. That's okay.
Yes, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you, Madam Chair. I'll give the Joint Campus Area Committee a brief introduction to the project, and then I'll let Scott Utter introduce the team. So this particular project did go before the Design Review Board on July 16th for an informational presentation. And first, I'll tell you a little bit more about the project itself. This project developed as a space master framework plan for student affairs to guide facility development and enhance student success and personal growth. The framework plan purpose was to provide an itemized list of projects with estimated budgets in base year 2023 and outline a condition assessment of the existing facilities in the report. In addition, objectives and forecasted student needs. The plan goal was to take into consideration current and future enrollment trends to guide facility development and enhance the student academic success and personal growth. So when the Design Review Board heard this, their feedback was that they appreciated what was expressed for student engagement process and the input received. appreciation was expressed for the desire to activate East Campus Mall and creating a reason for these spaces. Additionally, the committee really appreciated how they expressed the inclusive nature of the plan, how it might manifest itself as projects are developed, and continue to consider equity and inclusion as the projects become real. A request was made to be sensitive about the landmark status of the Red Gym and for any projects that are developed on this site. So with that, I'm going to pass it over to Scott. Thank you.
Hi. All right. Thanks, everybody. Good afternoon. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm Scott Utter, Director of Campus Planning and Landscape Architecture. I also served as the project manager for the Student Affairs Framework Plan. I wanted to introduce some folks we have here with us tonight from Student Affairs. Argyle, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, good afternoon. Argyle Wade, Chief of Staff for Student Affairs, and I'm the primary staff member who's been working with the team on this project. Thank you.
And then we also, so Argyle and I are available for questions at the end if there's anything specifically directed to us, but generally we're going to throw it over to FLAD Architects, who is our consultant on this, and I'll let Jamie introduce herself and take it away. So thanks.
Great. Thanks, all. Let me just check the audio's working. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Yep. Okay,
great. We can hear you.
Hi, all. Jamie Matthews, a principal with FLAD, and I'm joined by my colleague, Allie. We're going to share audio. So, Allie, introduce yourself, and I'll get screen share here.
Yes, hi. I'm Allie Lenning, and I'm an architect with FLAD. We're going to get...
Jamie, this is Janine. If you need any help, I'm more than happy to share the screen.
Jamie, if you're speaking, you appear to be muted somehow.
Yeah. We can't hear you anymore.
I guess a question for both Janine and Chair, would we want to do like project updates first and then circle back to this, or just throwing that out there as an option to allow some time for the technical things to be ironed out?
Sure, I think that's a great suggestion.
I'm also good with that. Do we need to make a motion?
To move the agenda? I don't think so. I think there's consensus.
Okay.
MGR, I'm sorry.
Yes. Is there an ability for someone else to share the presentation while the presentation is given? I ask that just because I probably can't stay for longer than 30, 45 minutes.
I think that's possible, but I believe they're also having audio problems. So
okay.
That
Thank
would,
you.
I guess, only be half the equation.
Okay, no objection. Thank you.
Okay, so moving on to Legistar 51256, the updates on the projects.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to share my screen very briefly here. And all right. So what was in attached to the agenda item includes a list of all of the projects that are currently under in progress. Items that are highlighted.
Can you make that screen so it's easier to read?
Oh, sure. Thank you for that suggestion. That's a really good full screen. Here we go. And highlighting, you know, anything that's yellow has been updated. I did create a slide set of specific projects so folks could ask questions on those specific projects where some of these key updates have taken place. So I'm going to jump to that slide set and then I'll go to full view. Thanks for your patience. And if we want to jump back to any other projects, we can absolutely do that. I know Gabe's transportation team has been hard at work with Jonathan Bronk from our landscape group, updating some bus shelters. They've taken the opportunity to really take on some large projects, and I would like to invite Gabe to speak to any aspects of this that might be more prevalent for the committee.
Sure. Thank you, Janine. As this map shows, we've moved or updated quite a few bus stops. The purple or darker colored dots were new bus pads or shelter relocations, or let me rephrase that, stop relocations due to campus bringing on 60-foot articulated electric buses here in the fall as part of a collaboration with the City of Madison Metro. So we'll be bringing those to campus. They will be running most of our route 80s, 80, 81, 82, and 84. They will be supplemented by the current fleet, the diesel or hybrids as needed, but for the most part, they will be the 60-foot buses. And then the red or slightly lighter color dots on here are bus shelter relocations that we've done in order to meet local route stop moves or moving the campus route 80s due to BRT, which is mainly along University and Johnson and Randall. A couple that are along the observatory and around the hospital were just some shelter updates. We've added shelters to make it a little bit more comfortable for bus riders. That's all I got, Janine, on this one.
Are there any questions?
MGR?
Yeah. Hey, Gabe, thank you. The red dot by Dayton and Randall Avenue over there, I don't think there's currently a bus stop over there, or is one being placed there? Do you know more about that?
It is slightly offset, I believe, so that way you can still read the street name and what went commons. It is going in on the Randall side of that dot. Where okay. That bus stop is, that's where we're putting in a bus shelter.
Got it. Okay, thank you. I thought it was going on Dayton. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Gabe. Appreciate it. The Camp Rundle Sports Center replacement project. Basically, the Joint Campus Area Committee referred this to Design Review Board at the June meeting. The Design Review Board did approve it with a couple of conditions to extend the landscaping beds on Monroe Street, reconsider the North Entry Plaza, which is basically the dining hall entry facade and paving area, and then to evaluate the addition of a green roof on the pavilion. So that's just an FYI for the group here. And we'll provide more information as things progress on that project. Another thing we wanted to bring to your attention, and I'll try to be as quick as possible, I want to be conscious of your time, the Engineering Education and Research Building. The Design Review Board did essentially approve it after the Joint Campus Committee referred it in January. March, the Design Review Board approved it, but the design team was working with the donor, and they did do some material updates that did not warrant it having to come back to Joint Campus Area Committee. However, we wanted you to be aware of some of those material changes. And essentially, they replaced the weathered steel with masonry, increased the amount of window glazing, and replaced the terracotta panels with stone. So I've included a couple of images of the updated renderings. And I'm going to go through these quickly, but I'm absolutely happy to go back to any images or answer any questions. And that's the last image. Questions? Okay, I'll move to the next item. The Fluno waterproofing and renovation project is very close to completion. I think they're in the process of the final sidewalk and paving restoration. The parking structure will be complete by the end of this month. There were a couple of delays with some of the plaza work due to the rain, but I think we're looking at an August completion, if not sooner. A brief update on the Lakeshore Path Limnology bypass route. This is the one that was originally designed as a bridge, but now is going behind the building. And the design team has been working very closely with the limnology and transportation team members. It does look like it will be pushed out possibly quite a bit to make sure we're allowing time for research for the limnology folks. So we'll provide more updates when that construction start date is finalized and when to expect any potential closures in that area. But again, it's still very early, more to come. Folks may have driven by the Morgan Ridge Hall site, the well under construction. I think we have the construction completion slated for May of next year. There are still some lane closures, as you've probably seen, and they're continuing to dry in the enclosure of the building, but it's moving along. Near East Playfields, that's well under construction. However, due to a lot of the rain, they've run into some issues with standing water on the site. The team is working to address those issues, but I think they're expecting some deliveries of some of the stormwater tanks that we'll be storing underneath the fields in the future. Observatory Hill sidewalk realignment. I believe this group saw a study that was done on this area. The study is complete, and stay tuned for a future project in early next year, or excuse me, yeah, either late this year or early next year. We'll provide updates as soon as we know more. Last but certainly not least, there's the VetMed addition renovation. Super excited to share that, you know, where the addition is near, I believe it is complete. Looking ahead at some of the other portions of the building, there's the VetMed North, VetMed South, which we're looking at February completion, and then the arena in summer of 2025. So a lot going on, and I will stop sharing my screen unless there are questions. MGR?
Thank you. Can you go back to the mortgage hall slide? I just have one question on that. There's currently construction happening, obviously, and on the University Avenue side of things, there's a new pedestrian path that was created. I've gotten some complaints just over the past couple of months. It slowed down a little over the summer, but with students coming back pretty soon, I expect it to come back up. The complaints mostly have to do with both bikers and people walking on the same narrow path and running into a lot of just conflicts with that. For the most part, bikers are going eastbound, but pedestrians are walking both ways. Is there any possibility of expanding that path or making it more like giving a bike path and then a pedestrian way? Just something along that line to clear up that conflict?
That's a great question, and thank you for bringing that up. I don't have an answer for that, but I can certainly relay that to the design team and report back. I see that Gabe has unmuted. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I'm gonna ask Kaden to chime in too. I believe that detour was shrunk down a little bit due to site constraints with BRT construction this summer as well. So Hayden, do you have any updates on that?
Yeah, I expressed concern early on when they switched that, even like suggesting some sort of detour to go around it with bikes, so it would be conflicting with pedestrians. But they determined it was okay for now, and we'll just deal with it. So, yeah, I'm currently working with another complaint in that area about the entrance to the path on Orchard Street. So I'll be monitoring it again.
Thank you. Yeah, I think especially before we see the uptick of people coming back into campus, it'll be quite important to address that. Thanks.
Thank you. Robbie?
Yeah, so on the list of projects, we didn't get an update on the Lakeshore Path planning and survey. There's been considerable interest among the bicycling community on the process for that. And I know you guys had an open house, but I'm wondering if people could not make it to the open house, if there was a way besides the survey to submit comments. And specifically, I think there are some people who would like to submit some photographs of the condition of the path during less than ideal weather, let's just say, because I think there's, among some people, there may be a misunderstanding that the path is only used during good weather, and that it's, you know, they don't realize how bad it can get during not good weather. So people would like to know where to submit both comments and photographs so that the consultants can consider those. And I'm not actually sure who the consultants are for that. Not the bypass.
Correct, correct. But I've just had this up because it was in the vicinity, yes, and yeah, I don't have an image of the area. Yeah. But yeah, thank you for that question. And yeah, I know there was the survey and the open house. So the question is there an email address that folks can submit to? I don't have an answer to that question, but can I get back to the committee with more information on that? Okay, absolutely. I will do that.
Because as I said, I know that there were quite a few people who couldn't make it or are just finding out about it now, and they would like to submit some substantive comments.
So, Janine, I'll jump in a little bit. We'll get an email address for that, Robbie. But the general cadence of this is in the next couple of weeks, there'll be a couple of listening sessions with some identified campus stakeholders, which include quite a bit of folks across the university, as well as Lakeshore Preserve. And then there will be another set of public meetings, probably late September, early October, because we want to make sure we also give a student the opportunity to participate.
I do want to emphasize that although this is on university property, there are a large number of people from surrounding neighborhoods that use this on a regular basis. So it is not just the university community. This is a transportation corridor that is used by many people on the Near West Side year round. So I just want to emphasize that, and maybe you can consider that when you do your outreach sessions, so that people, I mean, in my neighborhood, I'd say half the people use that and half you use University Avenue when they're going downtown. And, okay, you know, it's a major transportation corridor for people off campus as well.
Yep, we have counts. We see roughly 2,000 to 3,000 users across the path throughout the day. So,
well, I was actually told by Aaron that there were 15,000 users at Limnology per day.
It was I misspoke when I gave that information. It's about 15,000 are a month. It's what we're seeing is about 2,000 to 3,000 during each day during peak times.
Okay. And that's average across the path, or the portion from that passes between the dorms and Limnology?
So there's three sets of eco counters that are out there, one near Limnology, one near Goodnight Hall, and there's another one which I can't think off the top of my head, but they all average right around that same number. They're maybe 100 to 200 different. It's not hugely significantly different, but they're, you know, if it's 23, it's 25, and 28 is kind of how they go throughout there.
Okay. And that captures pedestrians as well as bicycles.
It's everybody going through there that is at least 3 feet tall.
Okay.
So anything that will break the counter's beams.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm just curious, do they count, what happens with groups?
If they're all in line, it would not capture a group. So it would capture every time the beam gets broken. So if they're all in line, it would only capture them once.
Or if they're side by side?
Correct.
Okay. I think you might want to consider how many people use that on foot by group and whether the counts are accurate for that. So just a consideration there. You might want to do some truthing with manual counts as well.
Yeah, that's kind of what we've seen on average throughout the last 3 or 4 years, is right around that same number. So,
okay, but
point taken. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Doug?
Yeah, I'll be brief because Alder MGR already expressed part of my concern, and it's about what's going on in university. Let me first note, and this might be somewhere between the city and the university, as you go from Francis toward Randall and university, there are a series of lane closures. And rather than the lanes shifting and going back and forth, the left lane's closed, everybody has to move to the right, then the right lane's closed, everybody has to move to the left, and then vice versa. And then it all culminates down by CDIS, where you have the pinch from both that building and the bus shelter being redone, where it gets really messy, as Alder MGR already mentioned. That bus shelter does not appear to have had any progress made on it in a month. I run through there every other day after coming off of Lakeshore Path, I might add. And that bus shelter needs to be completed. That needs to be a priority if that means resources come off of something else to get that done. But that is a real choke point that needs to be addressed. Thanks.
Thank you.
So Janine, I can provide some updates on that.
Please.
And I will defer to Ben to if there's any clarifications needed from the city. But I was just in an actual meeting today with city engineering. Going from right to left, the city's Lake Street closure should be cleared up before school starts. That is part of their sewer project on university. So that should be cleared up for the start of school. As Janine mentioned, the Fluno project would be finished up before school as well. As you come through CDIS, our Mortgage Hall will remain. The BRT closure right across from there, for the most part, should be done, I believe, mid-August, with it opening up in September-ish completely. So the dates for that one I can't speak to completely. So those, almost all that should be cleaned up here before school starts. I don't have a complete update on the BRT stop over there, but that should be open from the last I heard, or cleared up, I should say.
Okay, thanks for the clarification. Anything to prioritize that one would be helpful because it really hasn't moved in months and it is messy.
I can bring that to the attention of our BRT project managers and kind of see if there's an update to be provided on that site.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Jared, did you have a question related to the traffic?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, just to kind of go off of that, I guess, I also wanted to highlight, or I guess a quick question first. You had mentioned that the construction will end before students move back in or student move in, but I'm so sorry. I've had multiple tabs open right now. You mentioned that construction will end before classes begin, but do you know whether it'll end before student move-in happens around mid-August?
So my understanding for Flynn Will Center, Janine, we should be clear of our construction by move-in. My understanding, the same thing for the city's utility sewer project. There's some work that needs to get done after some street stuff, street improvements, but it should be. Again, can't speak for them because they have their timeline. And if the weather holds up, we should be good. That's a big thing too. So they all should be, my understanding, should be cleared up by the end of the week of the 15th.
Okay, awesome. And then the BRT project on Johnson and Orchard, that's on a city timeline, correct?
The BRT at Johnson and Orchard, that should be cleared up the same as the one on University, where Ben said he can get us an update, but they should all be done roughly the same time.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions of Janine? Seeing none, thanks so much for Janine.
Absolutely. Great report. Thank you for the questions.
So how's FLAD doing?
Let's try again.
Okay.
Good. Oh, that's great. You can hear me.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to hope it doesn't ghost out again. Thank you all for adjusting your agenda to accommodate us. Janine, I may take you up on sharing the slides if you don't mind, just because that's when it seemed the audio went out for us last time, and hoping to avoid it again.
I don't mind. Just one moment,
great.
Please.
Thank you so much. And then we'll just help with when to advance.
Yep. Just one moment.
Thank you.
Okay, you're on.
Great.
Thank you, Janine. So as Scott and Janine said, this was a framework plan to guide student affairs, and in the interest of time, we'll kind of gloss over the first two, just to say that we were engaged beginning back in the fall of 2022, and we had multiple consultants that joined us with different scopes. Janine, if you wouldn't mind going to the next slide. So they're listed here. We've been working since fall of 2022 and then are now currently in the process of some just final refining of details. So you go to the next slide, please. As you can see, Student Affairs has a wide range of spaces that are dispersed across campus. So the space portfolio includes recreation and wellness spaces, the Memorial Union, the Dean of Students Office, Student Activity Center, the student offices and the Student Activity Center, and then the Multicultural Student Center, Veterans Center, just to name a few of many. And the scope ranges from entire facilities to office suites. And we can go to the next slide. So we began by doing some facility assessments, and as you see here, we used a system that just helps to guide us with measuring potential investments that may need to be used for the facilities or the measure of investment. In general, student affairs space that was recently constructed was in satisfactory condition and aligned well with their current function. Although there were a few facilities that are historical or culturally significant that may require some more intensive. Next slide. So after the facility assessments, we conducted many stakeholder listening sessions with both staff, and then we held individual student sessions as well to really help us align with both student affairs framework moving forward and also the needs of campus. So we developed these five priorities, and the priorities we defined as areas of focus that would have the highest and greatest impact for student affairs and students. And then those priorities led us to develop these recommendations. And we're going to focus on three recommendations today. And these recommendations that are starred have the greatest impact to facilities or the campus landscape. The remaining four are more operational in nature. So we'll, like I said, we'll focus on the first three. Next slide. Thank you. The first section was to create a network of belonging spaces across campus. And we're defining belonging spaces as spaces for students to convene and build community and students of shared backgrounds or potentially underrepresented students in particular. The campus is seeing both a higher demand for these spaces, the current existing spaces, and also an increase in request for additional spaces. So what we did was we developed four models that are located here that could help guide the campus as these needs evolve. And they prioritize different attributes. So the first column looks at a co-located facility. The second column responds to the unique geography of campus and distributes spaces across. The first row looks at independent centers that would be dedicated to a specific group or population that then would have access to shared resources, whereas the bottom row looks at an all shared space. Next slide. The intent of this first recommendation was to be flexible and really provide student affairs and campus with a kit of parts that they could use as these needs evolve. So the next step after developing these models was to kind of create this scalable kit of parts, if you will. So as you can see, we've developed a high-level space program that includes different functions as well as some general square footage guidelines so that as these requests come in and as space becomes available, student affairs and campus can align. Next slide, thank you. So in relation to also looking at maybe a future model, we also looked at the existing belonging space on campus, and a high proportion or the majority of space is actually at the Red Gym. So we did a more intensive analysis of the Red Gym. And the second recommendation then looks at addressing the facility quality, accessibility, and wayfinding, and not only for student affairs, but for all occupants of the building, because there are other units there. And just for those that are unfamiliar, the Red Gym is located next to the Memorial Union and in a pretty prominent location on the lake. Thank you. Next slide, Janine. Thanks. So we worked with our historical preservation consultant and kind of assessed what parameters we should be working within and then developed three potential recommendations that then would be analyzed in a future feasibility or pre-design study. And these are in escalating order. So option A looks at addressing the wayfinding internally, as well as accessibility. So it's the construction and continuation of additional vertical circulation within the main volume of the Red Gym. If we go to the next slide, please. The second option builds upon the priorities that were laid out in the previous, but it implies a vertical addition to the Red Gym as seen in the lower left-hand quarter in that blue mass. And again, this would provide continuous vertical circulation from the entrance and also a common landing point for the elevator. Next slide, please. And the third slide is, or third option is the most intensive in its nature. And it is suggesting a building addition between the Red Gem and the Pyle Center next door. This would give us the opportunity to provide a continuous vertical core that would include the egress stair and the elevator, and then also hopefully provide more ways for the facilities and the groups between to collaborate with each other. And this also would have, or hopes to have, the less impact on current uses of the facilities. Next slide. And then in addition to addressing accessibility and wayfinding, we also just looked at ways to improve the quality of the space by placemaking and really making the space reflect inhabitants within. So that could be through dynamic signage or infographics and artwork, and then also access to outdoor space, and ease of access to outdoor space was brought up by both staff and students. And you'll see these concepts in particular carry over into the next recommendation, which Jamie will talk about.
Great. Thanks, Allie. Yeah, the next series of slides speak to a recommendation that focuses on another building on campus where Student Affairs has a significant portion of space. That is along the East Campus Mall, which as many of you will recognize is a main thoroughfare through campus. And so we're sort of focusing on that green tagged building, right, which we'll zoom in on in a second, but just wanted that context of this exists in kind of a within that thoroughfare and within some other really key strong anchors on campus. And so we're trying to kind of look at ways to illuminate and activate that particular facility and give it some additional identity within the context of these other strong sort of sense of place. So the next slide just zooms in on that sort of, we call that resources anchor. It's the 333 building along East Campus Mall. This slide just aims to highlight the massing of that building and just the occupants within. So kind of the highlighted floors would be where Student Affairs has a significant portion of space that they occupy, but there are many other occupants in the building. So the recommendation we'll focus on and highlight today aims to kind of talk about that activating the entry in particular and kind of the immediate area around the mall to make it that entrance a little more prominent and vibrant. There are subsequent recommendations that talk about kind of increasing flexibility and multi-purpose use of the space within as well. So specifically around kind of activating that entry, there was a lot of feedback and thoughts around, again, and just trying to increase identity, give a little bit more prominence to that entry point and convey kind of all the really exciting student-focused activities within. Certainly the planning team is well aware that this is a developer facility, right? And that any ideas would be studied in conjunction with that potential limitation. But the thought was, you know, get ideas on paper that are thinking big about opportunities that might exist. So this slide includes some of the precedent images of sort of physical interventions that are suggested in the plan to think about. So one is about, you know, kind of breaking that barrier between interior and exterior so that you're getting more visibility along the mall. Again, it helping that facility to stand out is really an activated place for students. Kind of that middle couple of images suggest opportunity to, again, convey all the great things that are going on within the building via, you know, technology walls or some signage maybe that's potentially interactive. And then the final set of images on the far right talk about helping to increase just the wayfinding in that building. If you've been there, you come into the entry, it feels very developer, right? There's kind of not a key way to understand where you might be going or that the upper floors really have a lot of student space available. So something that just helps people navigate a little bit better. And then we do have a series of kind of additional thoughts that came up throughout the planning process about just how that the actual mall, the outdoor space could be used a little bit more frequently throughout our sort of our Wisconsin seasons. So the next slide just links where some of those opportunities could specifically be targeted. Again, we tried sort of not to fully design this, but suggest some opportunity. So this is a slice, a three-dimensional slice through that entry and just kind of tags right where opportunity might occur. And then the next slide goes, provides some precedents about to communicate the ideas we heard again throughout the process about just activating the exterior of the mall with some more programming and again, some vibrancy, some of which already occurs in other areas along the East Campus Mall. And then that the final slide again tags where some of those things might occur just to land kind of the opportunity that might exist. So as Allie mentioned at the beginning, we kind of highlighted the subset of recommendations amongst all of them that are included in the plan on this final slide. Janine, we highlighted today the ones that are maybe more facility and site and physical in nature that this committee might be more interested to be aware of. The other kind of series of recommendations you see starred here are really important in terms of space utilization and evolving space needs, but focus more on kind of ways to improve multi-purpose nature of space and kind of get at some operational opportunities that might increase use into the future. So that was the set of slides. Happy to go or have Janine go backwards to any that might be of interest, but I think intent is to open it up for questions if there are any.
Any questions, folks?
MGR, hand raised.
Thank you. Thank you guys for this presentation. I want to get a better idea of, I know you guys have been having stakeholder meetings for some time now. Can you give me a better idea of the student groups you have been meeting with and how the engagement there has been?
Argyle, do you want us to take that one or do you want to speak to the groups?
I can start, but maybe also love for you to tag in too on this. Thank you for the question. Certainly stakeholder engagement was pretty important to us, top of mind. And so we took this from a couple different levels, especially as we started broadly with, you know, looking at all students. We put out that very large student survey to both undergraduate and graduate students. But then we had in our minds some specific groups that may not always show up in our, you know, more normal data, you know, kind of scrapes with surveys. So we actually did focus groups, reached out to our most active student organizations, especially those in some of our upper underrepresented student areas. So all the groups that are affiliated with the Multicultural Student Center, our Gender and Sexuality Center, our Student Disability Resource Center, student veterans, international students, to name a few, and really did some intentional reach out to them with invitations and using their newsletters and their kind of communication methods to say, hey, we have these focus groups. We'd love you to show up for them. We'd love you to fill out the survey. And then we were able to capture people that did show up and try to continue to route the kind of invitations back to them, because we did a series of focus groups, not just one, but, you know, go out, get some feedback, do some work with FLAD, come back with a more refined set of recommendations. And we continued that approach throughout. We used our all student newsletters. So any student was able to attend some of the feedback sessions that we had. And, you know, kind of work the internal network and then the broad network. So that's, you know, a quick summary. But Jamie, Allie, anything you'd add to it that I missed?
The only thing I would add is that covers the input we got. And then I would say we've also, as the recommendations have been quote unquote finalized or, you know, drafts have been available, we've also circulated the report to all staff, including students. So everybody on campus, and have gotten actually some good feedback there too about either appreciating what's there or some good considerations to include so that it's, because the life of these things, right? We've been working on this for over a year. So there's been certainly some new considerations that have come about that we've been able to, I think, capture in the final deliverable with some of that feedback.
Anything else you would add? I would point out that in addition to the surveys and sharing distributing material, we held in-person workshops as well as virtual. So there was multiple mediums used.
Okay, thank you. And then from the engagement that you guys were able to do and the actual responses you received, did they lean one way or another between these options of like creating the network of belonging areas or things like that? This seems a little bit conceptual to me, so I don't know how much have been made into like final recommendations.
Yeah, the ordering here is not by mistake. I think there's a lot of interest in the network of belonging locations, and certainly that has, I would say from students, that has been the strongest area of interest and feedback. I would also say that, yes, the plan has been careful to be conceptual because there's still a lot of decisions in the works. And so providing flexibility and capturing input while still giving some room to implement these in a few different ways, that was intentional, I think, in us working with student affairs.
And we're trying to figure out, you know, as opportunities arise, what can we move quickly on, what will take longer to seed within our campus master plan. And so we're looking for both short-term opportunities, medium-term opportunities, and long-term opportunities. And so I think the design speaks to giving us the ability to be nimble while also start to develop, you know, kind of a direction, knowing that this is a 10-year plan for us. And we'll want to be, you know, thoughtful about moving ahead. But I do agree with what Jamie said, that there was strong interest in the network of belonging. But, you know, it also depends a little bit on where the students' interests are. The 333 East Campus Mall one also really popped because that's where all our student organizations are. A lot of them are, and our student government. And, you know, there's a lot of interest. We don't have enough space right now currently for our student organization demand. And so some groups are really interested in that too.
Thank you. And I know that when this plan initially started, it was called like the Student Affairs Master's Plan. And there was a discussion of whether there's the possibility to expand more student spaces across campus in areas that there currently is not. So beyond 333 East Campus Mall and the Red Gym, has there been a recommendation made on whether there is that possible expansion in the future, or does it seem like it? You guys are just focusing on kind of redesigning what's currently there?
Well, I would say that, you know, the two that we've highlighted here certainly talk about very specific facilities. But if you look at recommendation 4 and 5, those that we didn't speak to really kind of set up a broad series of conversations about where else on campus should additional student center space be, knowing that we may not be able to have a whole building, but could we have a space in a building that's being conceptually put together to try to find opportunities to you know, grow. And so I think that those recommendations 4 and 5 about well-being and multimodal space and opportunities to increase student engagement really speak to that ability to give us a framework to go to a dean or a person saying, hey, here's an idea that we have. We'd love to see this incorporated in that. So I think we definitely are trying to be where the students are. It's just a matter of finding those opportunities as they come. And that's part of that being nimble approach that we're looking for.
Okay, thank you. And then final question, I promise. Can you speak a little bit more about the future timeline? I know there was something mentioned about how the engagement has already happened, but there's clearly just still so much more to do, I feel like. So can you speak a little more about that? And also get into where community members and mainly students can continue engaging in this process.
Well, you're right. I mean, this is like the start of a long journey, right? And so we know that, you know, a plan is great, but then you have to start to operationalize the plan. And so that's the next step that we'll be starting on next year with what structures do we need to put in place, the campus, you know, processes for our capital improvements, you know, we need to kind of fall in sync with and get some of these projects in the queue. And so that's the next step, is we'll be starting to work with students and collaborators on campus to operationalize that and figure out, as we see a lot of options, what are the options that seem the most viable to start with. And then the other part of that is our funding process and where are there opportunities to find funding for some of these. So
I can't say that we've built out that whole framework right now. We're just trying to finalize the report and get that part done, but that's what we'll be turning our attention to very quickly, and you know, looking for any level of collaboration from the campus community, but also others who see interest in it.
Okay, thank you. And then again, appreciate this. Would love to hear more about this. You guys know I just graduated this semester, so I'm still very tuned into the student groups and stuff like that. So thank you for this. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. Doug.
Yeah, thanks. I think you may have just answered this, and I'm going to again ride Alder MGR's coattails on this one. But in terms of next step, you had mentioned initially putting together a timeline. I think you just answered that in budget. I assume we're nowhere near even ballpark budget estimates on any of these. Is that correct?
Jamie, you all did a little bit of calculations, but they were pretty high level, right?
Yeah, the plan does identify some projects to give some kind of thoughts about budget, but it's a dollar per square foot construction number to give them something to work with. So it will include a little bit of that, but really the pre-design phase is typically where budgets are more well-defined.
Okay, because there are some things like moving some stairways around in the Red Gym that seem to be maybe high budget items with maybe modest incremental improvements. So I think as you get into that, there's probably some trade-offs to look at. Thanks for the responses. I appreciate it.
Any other questions? Not seeing any hands up. Well, thank you so much, Jamie and Allie, for your presentation. Much appreciated.
Thank you for being flexible with our technology issues.
No worries. No worries at all. Thank you.
Thanks all.
So back to the agenda, Legistar 66581, Mike.
Well, Madam Chair, I can be pretty quick. I only have four updates for the committee tonight. Do have the option of showing you on Google Earth, but these projects haven't really changed from the last several months. So we have the update on our central sterile elevator project, which is again an infill kind of internal to the complex just between our hospital and the where the knuckle meets the VA parking garage. That work will be wrapping up next month, should be complete. I think most of the exterior work is done, and we've given Gabe and transportation back some of the sidewalk and stuff out there, but we should be all complete by the end of August. We move around to the west side of the hospital, and we have our emergency department improvements. That work, again, is inboard to the building complex. It's a small addition, taking some space, underutilized space out of the parking garage and reconfiguring the ambulance staging area and creating what we're calling a vertical care unit for the ED that's going to allow 8 additional treatment bays for low acuity cases, walk-in cases that can be treated and walk out pretty quickly, helping us with throughput in the ED. Construction on that has been slow to start, but that's because they've been procuring all the materials so that once they do start construction, they can go quickly. I believe they're getting mobilized on site as we speak this month here in July, and they are targeting December for substantial completion on the outside of the unit, and then we'll be working into next year fitting out the inside. The bigger project that everybody's aware of is the D2 module addition, again on the west side, 7-story tower, 5 stories exposed, 2 stories underground. A contractor has mobilized on site and will be beginning some site prep work. They're installing some temporary road conditions. We've relocated some parking in concert with UW-Madison Transportation and with our clinical chairs and access to the Medical Foundation Centennial Building. We're projecting substantial completion on that project by May of 2026 and first patients by July of 2026. There will more than likely be a groundbreaking of some sort arranged, and I'll be letting the committee know, as well as our colleagues at the Village of Shorewood and also with the City of Madison. And then a small project I added to the list, it's really internal, but it's back to our front entrance, the new clinic's entrance. We're back to making some additional improvements in the vestibule to handle HVAC concerns and weather-related issues that have arisen since we've opened that. We are making those improvements, and that work should be done by the end of August, but that's caused us to reroute all entrance into the hospital underneath the main entrance through the hospital entrance. But we should be done with that work by August. So come August, I'll take two more off the list. We'll just be down to two projects.
Thanks. Any questions of Mike? And I'm not seeing any. So thank you so much, Mike, for the updates. On to Legistar 51257, City of Madison, Ben.
I will go ahead and share my screen as well. Just have two updates here. 306 North Brook Street, shown in the red pin, kind of at the center of the map. Here, this is a project that kind of summarized at the last meeting, large student-oriented housing project. This is approved by Plan Commission on July 8th and approved at Council on July 16th. It is kind of contingent on the current porch light use being relocated to another different new building on East Washington Avenue, which was also approved. 305 North Francis, which is right here, is a project that's kind of percolating. You might've seen some media coverage on this. It's kind of a U-shaped project, would actually, as it stands right now, leave some of these structures that are along Conklin Place, you know, leave those, but redevelop around them. Estimated to be about 390 units and 1,300 beds. And just as of right now, also estimated to include affordable beds as part of that under the downtown zoning height bonus provisions of the zoning code. Nothing's been formally submitted for the approval process, but it is, like I said, kind of edging that direction. So that's really the only two projects that I have, and turn it back over to the committee. Any questions?
Any questions of Ben? Not seeing any hands up. So it looks like we are at the end of this evening's agenda. Motion to adjourn is in order.
Move adjournment.
And Doug looks like he seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? Any abstentions? Okay, we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody. Have a good month.
Thanks, Mary.
You bet. Bye-bye.